Let me put the nail in this coffin real tight. God hates a coward. God hates a coward. 21 and 8 says, but the cowardly and the unbelievers, murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake of fire, which is the second death. God wrote that, I didn't. Who leads the list of that ragtag mob? The cowardly.
Of course, the number one topic that's going on right now is this United Healthcare situation. So here's my two cents on that. Because I see everything numerically, especially when it comes to these type of events, it was a hit, but they made the hit and they made the meeting on a day or on around a time or at a place that has 33 in it. The Hilton, or just the name Hilton. And reduction is 33. Now, the one thing they want you to rest your heart and mind on is that this was done at the hands of somebody who maybe was denied a claim, that someone was disgruntled against the healthcare system. Everybody's disgruntled against the healthcare system. It doesn't matter who your insurance provider is. Everybody has a gripe against the insurance companies, because if they're a for-profit insurance company, then they tend to deny more claims than they reimburse. And they take that reimbursement, or they take the money that they denied through these claims, and they spread around those who have been instrumental in denying these claims. So they get a kickback. You save us X amount of dollars. So here's a portion of the X amount of dollars that you have saved us so you can continue saving us money. They have made it an incentive to deny claims in order to pay executives, in order to pay board members, in order for the stock prices to continue to go up. It's about a business. It's not about anybody trying to be an anarchist or a rebel. Those days are long gone. Everybody's pretty much programmed. There's really no such thing as a lone gunman or a serious. Those days have gone. Like the days of Ted Bundy, the days of Wayne Gacy, those type of serial killers, those, that type of foolishness is gone. Now they raise up people. Now they can mind program people. Now they can MK Ultra people to do what they want. And they want to control it and manage it because it's a moneymaker now to have news go on for 2 to 3 to 4 weeks, because advertising dollars pay for these programs. So they're going to drag this murder, this assassination on and on and on and on. And the one thing that stuck out to me is my man popped somebody in the early morning of a random day, what they want you to think is random, but in a random day, pop a guy in the back, a witness literally saw him do it, the witness runs away, this man get on an e-bike and don't even haul ass. He don't even, you know how when you used to pedal fast, you would sway the handlebars from side to side as if that was going to make the bike go faster? In our minds as children, it made the bike go faster. But we would haul out. He got on that e-bike, was kind of cruising down the street. He wouldn't even hit in a full speed. He didn't even pedal. He did like 2-3 pedals and coasted and kind of like weed in a little bit down the street. And then he supposedly dumped this bike, and then now he dumped this book bag. Now they found the book bag. And the book bag got Monopoly money in it. So now we're living a real life the Batman movie. When the Riddler was making all these little riddles, taking out people, it's I don't know if it's art imitating life or life imitating art, but this is why they do it. Because you're subconsciously programmed into thinking, I saw this before. It's not really a big deal. So, in a way, he's like the Riddler right now. And a Monopoly could mean just the fact that they may go after all insurance companies to take them down, to bring one up, or to combine them into one. since we were talking about this global economy, this global citizen, wouldn't you think they would have one global insurance company? Now, there's so many ins and outs of this situation that it's hilarious, but you could see them doing that. You could see, all right, the real reason why they popped this dude wasn't because somebody was disgruntled against this company. I mean, obviously, if you look up the stats, they denied more claims than the top insurance providers. But this guy only made $10 million out of doing that. The top guy, the top insurance CEO of Cigna, he makes $21 million a year. That's his kickback. But no one's popping him. So why is the lowest guy on the totem pole get popped? Maybe because he wasn't one of them. He wasn't a Freemason. He wasn't a Greek, as far as my observation and research went. But what he was doing, he was disrupting the cash flow. He was trying to pig out twice. So he's getting kickback and denying claims. But at the time, he was going into a Senate meeting where the thing they were bringing up was insurance providers and how they were denying claims. Now, Freemasons can't control everything. The Jesuits don't control everything. But they ain't going to let certain things get out in the media so you'd be alert to it. They're not going to tell you like, oh, this is what's going on right now. They're having a congressional meeting because of insurance providers denying more claims than they're reimbursing. So what he was doing was selling off his stock. Knowing that it was a ship going down, he was selling it off. And it reminds me of 2008, Big Short, where after that 2008 economic crisis, after everything that went through and found out that the bankers were getting greedy and causing the home market, the housing market to crash, no one went to jail for it. They were bailed out. And the guy who was like, Fleece Bank or something like that, an unknown guy who wasn't really a power banker, he was the only guy that went to jail in 2008. And he lost a fraction of what the big banks lose on a normal day. But he was the one that was punished for it. So they're doing this for a reason. They're showing you, this is what we do. And this is how we get away with it. But we want you to focus on the lowest guy on the totem pole. And then the social media comments reflect how people feel about insurance providers. No one felt sorry for this guy. They were like, oh, prayer, thoughts and prayers out of network. Like, man, maybe you have to co-pay for some thoughts and prayers. Like, people were ruthless. It just shows that people are upset against the health insurance providers or health insurance companies. So then it feeds into, again, the ritual or the psyop that this person was once a customer or client of Health United Insurance, that he wrote on the bullets, deny, depose, and defend, which is what they do to clients. They deny the claims, they depose them, or they delay the payments, so the person ends up dying where they don't pay out the claim. But they want you to believe that he wrote this on a bullet for it to mean something, instead of the people who are at the top who caught this guy double dipping and selling off stock. And obviously he not a Freemason because he would be reprimanded, but they popped him because he wouldn't stop what he was doing. That would look even more bad for everybody else. It's like a mafia commission. They had to sit down and say, look, this guy is selling off stock to protect his butt because he know we're going to fall. And if this gets out, this doesn't only disrupt Health United Insurance, it's going to start disrupting all the insurance companies that are paying out claims or denying more claims. So we have to make an example out of this guy to get everybody else back in line. So people think, oh, they're going to start approving claims now. No, they're not. You're going to be so focused on trying to find this one guy that they can't find. and they don't want to find. They want to keep dragging it on, so your brain is attached to finding or don't want to finding who this guy is, and just letting them riddle you with clues all throughout New York City, like the movie, and think this guy is the hero because he's doing the work that you would want him to do because you're being denied or you have family members being denied claims. But it's a sight to see for me. It's a sight to see. The more and more they bring out, the more and more there's little cracks and mistakes that they made. Like now this guy's new photo that dropped, he went from now a dark mask to a light mask. And he got caught in the back of a cab with it looked like they did flash photography in the back of this cab in order to use this man's face and his little medical mask as the new picture that dropped. Looked like a staged photo shoot. And then when you see him walking, he had it known. If you know if this is a professional hit and he wasn't wavering and he was so smooth and calm with it, even when they say the gun jammed, but people online telling me it's not the gun that's jammed, it's just the jam that needs to be racked every time he shoot it. I don't know. We don't know. We just making that assumption. But when he popped him, he did it in a way where it looked professional. Two hands on the gun, pop, pop, pop. So it looks like he would know what he was doing. It would look like he would also understand that New York City has cameras almost everywhere, especially outside of hotels. So the fact that he went to Starbucks, bought whatever he bought, drank it, set it down, and set it in a place not to bury it, and knowing that his fingerprints was going to be on it, but set it down in a place where it could be easily found. After he assassinated this man, took an e-bike. Now, in order to take an e-bike, you would have to pay it with something. You don't just take them. You have to fill out the form. Now, mind you, if it's a dead credit card or whatever, it would still pull up. You would still be able to trace if it was a car bought from somewhere. You would be able to track the movements. Then he just went to. Then he went to the park. Dropped off his book bag. Why do all this if you know that you are a professional hitman? Why do all this? Why not just take the bag with you? Matter of fact, why not discard the bag? Why drop it where police could easily find it, which is what they did? Then say, oh, he took a Greyhound out of here. He went back to, he's from Atlanta, came from this. It's too perfect. And they set up enough clues for you to pay attention and thinking that this was like some random dum-dum that just assassinated this guy because he was pissed at the insurance provider. It's like they set it up for you. They set the storyline up. They set the narrative up for you. So I guarantee you every week we're going to have, oh, we found some evidence. Oh, we found this. Well, we found this. This witness said that he was in the same building as him or the same hostel. I looked up this so-called witness. It was like a Spanish guy. And I looked up his YouTube page and I looked up his Instagram page. He's not really a tourist. This dude makes videos as a so-called self-acclaimed reporter. And he talks more about just sports. He's from Brazil, so he's not really a tourist. Most of his page is about NBA basketball. So they got a wannabe tourist on mainstream media talking about, oh yeah, I saw him, like he was in a hostel, but he didn't even give real information. And he had on hand a camera where he could videotape the hostel that he was in. So he was going down the hallway with a video camera to show the hostel hallways and room doors, which is odd to me. I mean, the rooms he showed were 407 and another room he showed was 403. I don't know the math of that, but I only know 47 is the problem of Euclid, which is in Freemasonry. But other than that, I don't know. But I was like, why would you just randomly film this hallway? Especially when the video is not on his Instagram page and that's not what he does. He's not like a tourist content creator. It's all about sports. So like I said, these are going to be bringing out more and more tiny little evidence little facts, little clues that'll keep you going and guessing. Meanwhile, they're going to make you forget about the next person who's going to be a CEO of this company, because they eventually have to name a CEO of Healthcare United. Now, who that CEO is going to be will tell you everything you need to know about the whole purpose of this event. But my man, Brian Thompson got popped. That's a wild way to die, get popped in your back. Almost like Judgment, denying claims and denying people that you know are sick that need your medicine. Turning your back to the people when you could have alleviated a lot of people's pain and suffering. So you get popped in your back. That's some judgment for you. But it's like that when it comes to jobs. It's like that in everyday life. And in relationships, it's even a bigger strife when we can talk about the effects of jobs on our significant other, or the effects of jobs on people and ones that we love. And I find myself going in and out of these scenarios and trying to pinpoint how these situations can be made better. And what I mean by that, let me start from the bottom. Let me start from a different perspective. Ladies, because I want you to chime in on this. I want to see the comments and I want to know your opinions. If you are with a person, if you are with a man, and he has a job that disrupts or has the ability to disrupt his ruach, but you can't do anything about it because obviously it pays the bills. And this man has talked about coming away from this job because they know it's not good for them, or good for their ruach, or good for their soul, or good for their body. But when your man goes to this job, you see examples of this job being put over top of you, or you feel that this person does not give you the same respect as they give the job. And I find this very typical, especially with women. That that you know that your man's boss could tell you, hey, you know this job. You know what you need to do in this job. You need to do this, this, and this, and this is how I want it to get done. You have watched your man do this job as it's been told to him how for it to be done. You see your man respect his boss and his job. He does not want, or he goes above and beyond in order for that. The boss that he serves isn't looked frowned upon by his service or his ability to do his job. So you know that if you're with your man and you're like, oh, let's do something, let's enjoy each other for a while, and you see the mind of your man go into a workspace, start concentrating on work, has to do something for work that they didn't have to do, but they did it. Because why? Because they don't want their reputation soiled with the company or with the boss. And you see this. You understand this. So later on, or whenever you feel slighted, or you feel like this person isn't really praising you or respecting you the same way that they respect the work and praise the work at their job, but you feel something, but you don't know how to say it, but you can notice that certain things are changing. And you're like, how come you're not willing to do this? And then they don't respond to you and say, oh, how can I make it better? As if they could respond to their boss. Oh, how can I fix this mistake? How can I do this to make everything okay? Instead, they give you an explanation of victimhood. They tell you, oh, I don't feel like doing it, or I'm tired, or I'm sick, or I'm, let me remove sick, or I have a headache. I'm not in the mood. And they really throw your feelings to the side. How are you supposed to feel about that? I really want to know the mentality, because I want to hear it from a woman's mouth. Fellas, we already know how we deal with this situation. We already understand the scheme of things when it comes to women in this modern world, because now the system is for them. It caters to them. It coddles them. But I want to hear the different perspective if this happened to a woman, because I'm trying to understand it. If I see you doing above and beyond things that you didn't need to do because you're in fear of how that reflects to your boss, how is not the same respect shown to the person that covers you? How is that same respect not shown to the person that provides for you? A check is a check. But the person who covers and provides is doing more than someone just cutting a check. Why not show the man that's covering you the same respect, or the woman that's covering you through prayer the same respect? And hearing what this person's issues are when it comes to something that shouldn't be put above the household. I'm really confused about that. And I try to find or search out stories in scripture that could kind of alleviate the thoughts that are scrambling around in my mind. And I come to Daniel. Daniel, because he was in the captivity of Yehuda. And then as they went down into Babylon. And at the time, Nebuchadnezzar's son was reigning. And we all know the story of Daniel, when they wanted him and the other captives of Yehuda that were in Babylon, wanted them to eat unclean foods because the Babylonians ate unclean foods. And Daniel said, I'm not eating that. And the man that was in charge of Daniel and the others who were wise, faithful, and strong in Ruach, said, if you don't eat this food, you're going to be looking frail and thin, and then I'm going to be on the chopping block. I'm going to be in trouble because I'm supposed to look after you, because you can interpret dreams. You have wisdom. You have understanding. See, when they took us, they knew exactly who they took. They didn't take slaves. They knew that we were smart in doing things. Only when we get to American slavery, they want you to believe that you were just slaves, that you were just animals in the field when they captured us. But when we went into other nations in scripture, they knew exactly who they took. They took people who were skilled in science, skilled in math, skilled in astronomy, skilled in things that other nations couldn't comprehend, because the Most High didn't do anything for these nations that all nations could brag about and say, it was this God that did it. Everybody was worshiping wood, stone, gold, or silver. So Daniel put him to the test and said, you know what? Give me this to eat instead of the meat, the unclean meat you want me to eat, and watch how our continents, our weight, our look does not change. And it was proven that Daniel was right. So they left him alone. But the point of the story was that Daniel came in knowing he had to work for another man, knowing he had to work for an unclean man, knowing he had to work to somebody who was a blasphemer, someone who didn't humble himself before Yahuwah Sabaoth. Stu was like, look, I know I got to work for this person, but I'm not going to allow my service to my Elohim to ever waver. I'm not going to let the law, statutes, commandments, and Torah that I followed in my own town change just because I'm under captivity in a strange land serving a strange boss. Daniel used his mind, his wisdom, to be able to finagle and still be protected. He finessed the Babylonian authority in order for him to still be looked after and still get what he want. He did not let the customs of the people, he did not let the orders of his boss come between him and his Elohai. Too many of us get into situations where work is all we know. And especially modern day women, the job is more important than the household because it supplies a check to fulfill this independence from your coverer. That women yearn for this independence as if someone is oppressing you. And don't even look at the fact that your husband is your work husband is the world. That no matter what anybody else says, you make sure that your boss is okay with your service. That is important to the modern day mind of this world, this hustle mentality, that it's about money. I got to make sure I'm financially stable. Cutting out the fact that when the Most High brings you into a covenant, brings you into a hedge, that he's telling you, I am going to supply everything you need and the person that's going to help supply it so you want for nothing. You have nothing to fear. I am giving you my servant, the apple of my eye, my fervent lover, to cover you and your expenses so you do not have to go up above and beyond your ruach to satisfy a check. Some people do not understand this because they do not read the scriptures of the stories that point their way to it. Daniel knew that we are in captivity because we're disobedient. I'm not going to be disobedient in a foreign land, in a strange land I didn't even want to be in. A foreign and strange land I know is going to be destroyed because of how this nation worships gold, silver, stone, wood. That the Elohim I serve is going to destroy these people. Why should I change? I know I'm going to come out and leave this people. I'm never going to see this nation again. Why am I trying to appease them? Because they have a problem with how I serve the Most High. No one wants to take that risk. Few would take that risk, but the majority doesn't want to take that risk. I said this before on my podcast multiple times. When it comes to not knowing what you should be or how you should make money or how you should take your job and compare it to the Torah, is to prove the Most High in this matter. I want to serve you. I want to be under your hedge. I want to be under your salvation. I want to be in your hands. Put me where you think I should be. Now, when you make this prayer, know that he will disrupt work life because he's getting ready to bring you out of it. Or he's disrupting work life to make it easier for you to rise into a position that you could still serve him with a better schedule. But as soon as people get offended, as soon as people feel like the waters are turbulent a little bit, the boats start rocking and shaking, people stop praying, people stop believing and say, all right, let me do what's necessary for this man. Let me do what's necessary for this strange nation and this strange boss that I serve. Because him I see. I can see he's disgruntled at me. I don't want to feel the shame of another man looking down upon me because of my service to this country or service to another nation. This is why we are always sent into captivity. This is why we're always called stiff neck. We choose to appease and please people who will not or may not, or majority of them will not see paradise. Why do we care so much about their opinions? Why do we care so much about their image of us? Why do we care? I'm blessed enough to not have a boss. And the Most High knew this. He knew I would not serve another man. He put me in the position I am now because he knew in my heart I would not be comfortable serving another man, especially if I found him and I'm seeking him. And if I was in a 9-to-5 job, I would be disgruntled. I would not pay attention to nothing that man said. It would come a time where it's like, I'm not coming to work because of the new moon feast day. I would be upset. I would get fired from a lot of jobs. Because one of my prayers is like, oh, teach me to be zealous for you. Teach me to be zealous for your law. I would disrupt the financial stability. I would disrupt the financial stability I would have had in a job, and I wouldn't be able to provide accurately for my daughter because I would be entangled with following Yah so hard that I would disrupt the company that I would be working for or the boss I would be working for. I would become an enemy of that entity. I would be fired from jobs. So the Most High went forward. He removed those stumbling blocks from me. He must have saw and known my heart was going to get to this point, so I could be able to tell you to trust in him. That he will set you up. But it's based on, like Daniel, serving something higher than man. Then when the Babylonians got kicked out, the Persians came in. King Darius. In Daniel chapter 6. It talks about how Daniel was going to be a ruler in the kingdom of the Persians, or Medai. One of the rulers, a president over the other princes and rulers. And the princes and rulers did not like that. They were jealous. Because even when Daniel was faithful to Yah, wise, understanding, he was then elevated, just like Joseph, elevated because of his wisdom, because of his righteousness. Elevated because he did not waver. But the Most High gave him what? Favor. I'm mad I made that rhyme. So he was exalted, and the other princes and rulers of that nation didn't like it. So they went and had a decree made saying that if anybody want to worship their Elohim, they got to tell the king for 30 days for a petition, then they can do it. They wanted the whole nation, regardless of the nations that were mixed in, they wanted them to petition and ask for permission to serve their Elohim if it wasn't the Elohim of Madai or Darius. So that decree went out. Daniel knew that this decree was signed. My man, in the same verse that he said that he knew about this law, this oath, He went and prayed to Yahuwah. Matter of fact, he went to a window that was pointing towards Yerushalayim. Got on his knees and was praying three times a day. The princes and rulers who were jealous of Daniel's position of power snitched and told him because they caught him. They knew that Daniel was worshiping the living Elohim. They knew who he was serving. So pause in this. Does the people that you work with, your coworkers, do they know who you serve? If another boss came in right now or came in Monday and say, hey, we got a new boss and this is his name, would this boss come to you like, oh, I've heard of you because you worship Yahuwah? Would your coworkers tell your new boss, like, look, this one's special over here. This one's righteous because they follow the Torah. So this is how you handle it. If you went down to HR and be like, have you heard anything about me? And HR would say, well, we know that you follow Yahuwah. Would they say that? Because that's what they would say about Daniel. They knew. Now, Daniel wasn't walking through the street or running through the street, hosting and crying out loud that he worships Yahuwah. It was through his denying of serving nations, his denying of certain laws, that made his name be mentioned with the fact that he served Yahuwah. He didn't go out and kill and maim for Yahuwah. He didn't go out and preach against those who wasn't following law, statutes, commandments. No, he was doing what he was supposed to do, serving his Elohim, serving Yah. In the confines of his own home, in his own captivity. So when obviously they laid hold of Daniel, threw him in the lion's den, and Darius said, if your Elohim can save you, let him save you. And then the next morning, Daniel said, my Elohim sent an angel and shut the mouths of the lions. Now, this is how awesome Yahuwah is. Daniel from the tribe of Yehuda was in the captivity with Yehuda. Yehuda being likened to a lion. Daniel basically got put in a pit or in a den. Metaphorically amongst Yehuda. So I don't know if Daniel was wise enough to understand this. I'm assuming that he is smart enough to understand this, that they're going to put me in the lion's den when my tribe is mentioned or likened to a lion. I know that the Most High is going to protect me. I know the Most High just basically told me, I'm going to comfort you. You are in my kingly tribe, my kingly office. What does it say in Genesis? Yehuda is a lion's whelp. Crouching, even as an old lion. Who shall rouse him up? They had to know these verses. They had to know the stories. Specifically about Yehuda. They had to know that we're blessed, protected, and covered. It's only in the modern day world now. We don't see and understand this. We think times has changed only because we got skyscrapers, internet, Starbucks, and video games. We think these laws don't transfer from the old times into new times. Especially when the Most High says, I change not. I change not. Specifically, I change not. So that the sons of Yaakov and the daughters of Yaakov are not consumed. So I would know that if the Most High puts me, what would be the modern day lion's den? Let's say to modernize it, he would put me in a room full of let's say a SWAT team, and the SWAT team's name was Leo. I would walk into this room of heavily armed men and be comforted if I saw their patch of their squad name with Leo, but it had a lion on it with a crown. I would walk in there like, oh, I'm good. Where people may have thought I would go into that room and die or be shot or be killed, I'd go in there and we're in there playing spades or dominoes or laughing or joking, or I'm ministering to them. Where I come out of this room alive. Daniel had to know this. So I'm assuming it would make to be the same understanding I would have. So when Darius came back in the morning, he saw that Daniel was saved. So his persecutors, after Daniel was lifted up out of the den, his persecutors, those who snitched on him, those who ratted on him, they tried to send him to death. They were thrown into the den. And not just them, themselves. Their children, their wives, their whole household was thrown into that den. And they were thrown down where they broke their bones. Judgment. And I said this before, you don't think the Most High wants to show out and prove to people who do not follow him or know of him to see how exceedingly powerful his judgment is? You think he don't want to show out? We have to give him just cause for him to show out. He's not going to show out for us if we're wicked or in sin or in our vices. He's not going to show out if we don't trust in him. He's so righteous that he needs to be able to separate you from the other nations. But if you're walking like the other nations, if you are subservient to the other nations more than you are subservient to him or your household that he has set up for you, what makes you think he's going to step in? Because he sees that your heart and your mind is turned to the gratification of serving man, serving a strange nation. This was a curse to us. Wanting to serve other things other than the one who created us, other than the one who saved us, other than the one who redeemed us. It is in our bloodline, our bloodstream, who we are as people. And I'm not talking about just Yasharel, but other nations who want to look upon the Torah as a righteous thing or a righteous path. We go through this. All we know is this world. We know more about this world and how people want to be satisfied and pleased in order to be rewarded. We know more about this doctrine than we know about the Elohim that has created this entire world. That's what we do know. And because his blessings is spread out, we rarely ever figure out that he actually blessed us. Because we don't see it in front of our face in a way that we would see the image of a man. You know you get rewarded when you or get promoted when you know you've been working hard for your company. You get brought into the office. You have a sit down or you go to lunch. You feel you it's a celebratory ritual that goes along with being promoted or being brought up. Even me, I can remember when Priest Holmes was injured, the San Diego Charger game, he didn't come back for the rest of the game. I told myself, this is my time. Mind you, my mind wasn't on serving Yah. I knew of him, but I didn't know him. So my mind was like, it's my time to serve. I'm so glad to serve. I'm getting ready to serve right now. So when the next week came after the Chargers game, they brought me up to the office. They had to sit me down. Say, look, he may not be coming in and you're going to start. And they said it so serious to me. They was like, look, You got what you wanted. This is what you wanted. It's here now. So there's a ritual that comes with it. Then they go out and tell, by the way, Larry Johnson will be starting in this and this game. Then the fanfare starts. Then the promotions start. Then the excitement starts. But when it comes to Ya, it's not done in a way that we would normally view being promoted. Because we're more attached to this world than we are attached to him. So we faint after, fall after, hurt ourselves after, to be rewarded by man for serving. Because we know we're getting a check for it. The check is the blessing. We want to be talked about through other men instead of the men that's in the household or the person that's in the household. We want to be exalted by strange nations. And that's what we were always in jeopardy of, whoring after other nations to be exalted. Instead of wanting to be exalted within our own. So the judgment was that these accusers were thrown in and lost their lives. They lost their families' lives. Even when they had nothing to do with it, they got tossed in there too. That's some wild judgment on account of Daniel. And I said this goes back to the book of Yasher. That when the Egyptians were killing the babies, throwing them in the river, cutting them open, trying to run over them with their oxen when they were in the fields, that on account of one child of Yasharel, 1,000 men were destroyed. Now we go to Daniel. A couple of princes tried to destroy Daniel through a wicked invention or a wicked doctrine. On account of Daniel, not only the men who went, their wives went, their children went. And I'm not saying it was 1,000 people, but I'm saying for Daniel, there were some bodies attached alongside that. Even people had nothing to do with it. Just as in Egypt, the Egyptians that died, some of them were citizens that had nothing to do with the oppression of Yasharel, but they got taken away in judgment just the same. This is the power that we have that we will not use. The righteousness is the power that we have that we will not use. We will not put forth this righteousness. We will not put forth this type of understanding in order for strange nations that do not serve Yahuwah. We do not prove the Most High in this matter and showing him that we serve something higher than the company that we work for. And in the end, Daniel was safe. In the end, King Darius had to make a decree. And I'll read that decree in Daniel 6, verse 26 to 28. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men tremble and fear before Elohai of Daniel, for he is the living Elohai, and steadfast forever, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and in earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Koresh the Persian. Daniel prospered. Doesn't it say in Exodus that I will be an adversary to your adversaries and I will be an enemy unto your enemies if you hearken and do what I tell you to do? So our boss should be Yah, because it says in Daniel that he rules in the kingdom of men and set up whomever. Don't you know that he can also put down whoever? Those who tried to corrupt his children. Cause his children to fall. Disrupt his children's ruach in order for them to not fully worship him and praise him. He removes stumbling blocks. But first, you have to see the stumbling block in order to know it needs to be removed. You need to go to him and say, hey, this is a stumbling block of offense for me. Remove it so I can serve you better. Do we say this or do we say, oh, please, make my boss like me? Or do we say, please, let me serve this boss so he can be pleased with me to promote me? Do we say this or do we say, Yah, remove the stumbling block so I can be prosper enough to serve you? Prosper me with the righteousness, understanding, and wisdom to know how to deal in my job. So I'm not becoming a stumbling block to myself and not becoming a stumbling block to my household. Does this prayer grow out? Does this prayer go out when you pray? Women, do you pray if your man is struggling in his job, which affects your relationship? Men, do you pray this prayer to your women when their job affects your relationship? Because it's a mentality that people have in this modern day world that is about, that all they know is about pleasing man in order to be accepted by man. Which we all know comes from a sense of insecurity to some degree. Because if we look lowly upon ourselves, we want someone else that we see deemed higher, regardless if they're unrighteous, regardless if they're reprobates, we see them being lords over us, that we want to please them in order to fulfill some hole that we don't feel because we're insecure. Or we look lowly upon ourselves. That's an issue I see happening. That's an issue I constantly see evolving on both sides of the aisle. But I've dealt with it more than most out of the current relationships that I've had. I've dealt with this spirit more than once. I dealt with it when I was in the world, and I deal with it now. It's just only ironically that some of these situations are repeating. So that's why I'm frustrated on this episode, because I truly want to know what is a person supposed to do, you know, besides prayer and seeking Yah. But I can't get the information over to where it's understood. Because people are locked in the spirit that I have to defend myself. I have to defend it because this job, this work life is what is putting security within my soul. If I know I do good for them, I know I'm looked after. I'm looked in a positive light. They won't disrupt my reputation because I'm willing to go above and beyond for them. Daniel never did that. Daniel didn't go above and beyond to appease Babylonians. Daniel didn't go above and beyond to appease Persians. Daniel stayed true to who he was. He said, I'm serving Yah. Yah is my boss. Yah is my master. You don't hand me no check. You don't hand me no promotion. I will be promoted through him because I serve him, which is higher than you. They tried to give Daniel a gold chain and some clothes. And Daniel said, you know what? Keep that gold chain. Keep those clothes. But I'm going to tell you what this writing means on the wall. I'm going to tell you what this prophecy means. But they still gave Daniel the gold chain and the clothes. Giving you stuff because you're smart. Giving you stuff because they know they can't do without you. They couldn't do without Daniel. Daniel was the only one in that kingdom could be able to interpret. He was the only one that was wise enough that they needed wise men, and their wise men didn't know much. They knew that the Most High gives understanding and knowledge to his people, which is why they didn't go over there to destroy the Israelites. They knew that. I mean, not that they could anyway, but they knew they couldn't destroy a certain amount of people because they knew that the understanding and the smart and our us being smart traveled. Now, I can tell you through the David Rumsey map collection that Medai in Persia was in Central Africa before it is where you think it is now. Before it was whited out and watered down, it was in Africa. So when Daniel said he looked out his window and prayed towards Jerusalem, which is what is mentioned in the Book of Kings, that even Solomon said that if your people, even if they sit in captivity, can pray towards their land, you will hear them. So I know that the window that Daniel was looking out of had to be somewhere in Central Africa where he could easily turn and say, look, this is the biblical lands. So I know all these places were close together because they had to walk. To go into captivity, the Most High is going to make sure you get to the captivity destination. Imagine of us trying to get to America and this in captivity and had to walk. We would not make it to captivity. That it would be 400 years getting there, trying to walk. We wouldn't have made it going through the water. So the Most High gonna make sure we end up go to captivity alive, so we can serve out our punishments, but also to be a light amongst other nations. And also to expose the fact that there is an Elohim above all Elohim, made of gold, silver, wood, and stone. That's why we do it. It's not why we do it, but it's the perks of having favor with the Most High. That he's able to come into our lives, remove stumbling blocks, set us up that we could be financially stable, that we shouldn't worry about what man thinks of us. We shouldn't worry about what man can do to us. We should not worry about if we're not getting this promotion, if we're not getting the check that we want, if we're not getting promoted. We shouldn't care. To go above and beyond. When Daniel didn't go above and beyond, you could do literally the basic of what you're called to do. And then watch you be promoted. Watch you be set to the side. Watch you find a different opportunity that's going to bless you. But in order for that to happen, you have to let go of this fleshly mind of, I'm going to appease somebody else to fix the hole that's in my body or to fix the hole that's in my spirit. I remember I told the first fiance, look, I was like, in 2 years, I'm gonna retire you. Like, you don't have to work. Never respond to that. Never was like, oh, yippee. Oh, yay. It was because she found solace. She found comfort in working. She could bounce around and get jobs. And I think that after a while, it was her thing. Like, knowing that, oh, my worth in this country far exceeds any other worth. So I know if I get more and more jobs, that means I'm qualified and I'm beating out people who also want my spot. So I'm comfortable just working, serving this world, serving the system, rather than trying to serve Yah. That serving Yah would make my work life much easier. But I'd rather have this hard work life of struggle ingrained in me for all in generations since slavery. I'd rather have this type of work life because it benefits me. I get a check. I'm always instantly gratified. I could walk into any company and say, oh, they want me. I could leave out a job and say, oh, they want me. They're going to promote me. Because I'm smart in this world. And they know I'm a good servant. After a while, you're gonna stretch yourself. The more you come into this truth, you're either going to be a good servant for this world or a poor servant to Yah. You can't be both. I would say that Daniel was I wouldn't say he was a poor servant, but Daniel wasn't doing what they wanted him to do. He didn't do the customs. He stepped in and was like, yeah, I can read this. I can interpret that. That's it. Other than that, don't even bother me. But other employees were worried about getting their heads cut off. Other his coworkers were worried about getting the axe and dying, literally dying. Not being fired. I'm talking about literally dying and being killed. That's what his coworkers were worried about. Daniel wasn't worried about that. But us, when we get in situations, because work life is all we know, we so scared to be fired. We scared to be righteous in the midst of people who do not follow the Torah. You think the Most High won't shame somebody that fires you because of him? He even says in scripture, in the last days, people are not going to like you if they find out that you are worshiping and following Yahuwah and Yahusha. That shouldn't even be a surprise to you anymore. Just as I'm seeing more and more people with Freemason logo stickers on the back of their cars, and I'm not talking about Mercedes-Benzes, Rolls Royces, I'm talking about Subarus. I don't know, they don't even make Subarus anymore, do they? I'm talking about low-level, mid-sized cars, scratched up, faded paint, but they got Freemason stickers on the back of their cars. Everybody's telling you exactly who they serve. We don't need stickers. We don't need bumper tags. We don't need license plates. It's through our actions that tell everybody who we serve. And when our bosses, those who think they're lords and masters over top of us, are humiliated or humbled on account of our righteousness, that is how that goes out above a bumper sticker. That goes out and far above a license plate. It goes further than this world. I know my Elohim. I know the Yah that I serve loves to show out. Loves to show out. If I call it down, I know he's going to show out for me. If I pray for it, I know he's going to show out for me. I spend more time serving him than I'll ever spend time serving man. I know he's going to show out for me. So I still want to hear the opinions of women when it comes to your significant other and a job that they struggle in, and knowing that disrupts a relationship or disrupts you feeling the same type of respect and praise that they give to a work life. I'm still trying to find out how to navigate this space because I dealt with this so many times, I don't know how to navigate it no more. I really just be like, look, it's a spirit. It's a ruach. Because you really truly can't tell somebody, hey, this is what Daniel did, unless they read it for themselves. You really can't show someone, hey, Yah has this. This is what Yah is setting up. This is what he's doing. So you can turn your intention and not becoming a strife or a stumbling block. But it's hard to say that when pleasing the boss, pleasing work is louder than scripture, louder than what you could say. So sometimes it's best to say nothing and just watch and pray.